This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. It's being called the biggest relief operation in history. Tons of food and supplies are arriving in the devastated countries around the Indian Ocean. Today, the United States boosted its aid contribution tenfold to $350 million. Worldwide, more than $1 billion has been pledged. The relief effort is proving difficult in one of the hardest-hit areas, the province of Aceh in Indonesia, hit directly by both the earthquake and the tsunami. It's estimated as many as 80,000 people were killed there. Ports and roads were destroyed, and many towns flattened. Tom McCauley, a correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor, flew to Aceh's western coastal town of Mayulabo, which is still almost impossible to reach.
From the air, it looks like a post-nuclear blast, Hiroshima, something along those lines. There's rubble everywhere. Virtually the entire town has been laid to waste. The tsunamis have wiped out nearly everything in their path for up to a kilometer inland. Some palm trees and trees are left standing, but in areas further north of Mayulabo, entire fishing villages have been wiped out, and there's simply no trace left of anything except sometimes the faint outlines of building foundations. It's now been confirmed that about 1 in 4 people in the town of 40,000, that's 10,000 people, have died, and about 80,000 of the city is homeless. So government wiped out, infrastructure virtually wiped out, Indonesian media reporting that there's now a lot of food. I don't know if it's enough, but there's a lot of food building up at airports like the one in Medan and in Jakarta. But the challenge is getting it to the afflicted.
The scene that you describe seems like that there was some food aid getting into Mayulabo yesterday, but that it was becoming a source of a great deal of tension.
Suraid distributed, but there were police and military guarding the aid as it was being dispersed. Some of the people distributing the aid, particularly soldiers and police, said that there was some fighting over the food. Now, typically in these situations, it's difficult to get food to the most in need. That is, people who are wounded, people who are injured, people who are away from the urban center, perhaps trapped in wreckage. Now, what I was told was that the strong were taking the food and then selling it to the weak. Some refugees complained that they were offered food aid at inflated prices. Now, the police and the military seemed to have that under control by the time we were in the town, but they did say the distribution was precarious. I cannot give the impression that that's happening everywhere, because I was there only for a very brief window, but that was the complaint when I was there.
You write in your story today that Mayulabo is being considered ground zero for this earthquake and tsunami collectively.
Mm-hmm.
You heard some stories from survivors of what it was like for them when this hit. Tell us what they told you, please.
One of the survivors, who was a trader who was on the beach when it happened, described the horizon darkening and a wave higher than a coconut tree. He said it was like being in a blender. So he suddenly felt himself swept up and buffeted amidst debris, bits of houses. He was trapped inside one of these houses with his wife and his child, and had to choose between saving his child and saving himself. He seemed very distraught and very haunted by that decision. Ultimately, he was able to climb on top of that structure, and he and his wife survived. You hear that versions of that story echoed amongst the survivors. Most people tell of being swept up in a giant wall of water and tumbled for up to 3 kilometers, and then suddenly being stranded amidst broken debris, dead bodies, and often themselves with broken limbs. One of the gentlemen I spoke to yesterday had a broken leg which had simply not been treated, and his wounds were starting to fester in the tropical heat.
The people in Mayulabo would have felt the earthquake dramatically. They were so close to the epicenter. Did any of them tell you that they knew that was a sign to move away from the water, to go inland?
Interestingly, an island further south of Mayulabo, they have cultural and institutional memories of these tsunamis, and they have a saying in the local tongue that when the ground shakes, you must run to the mountains. So when the first earthquake happened, a lot of people simply ran as fast as they could away from the water. The opposite happened in Mayulabo. a fish trader told me that people actually ran towards the beach where the receding waves had left fish flopping. They started to gather the fish, which left them in the most vulnerable position possible when the tsunami actually hit.
Tom McCauley is a correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor, talking about the situation in the town of Meulebo on the western coast of Aceh province. Tom, thanks very much.
Thanks.